This is exactly right.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello.
And welcome
to My Favorite Murder.
This is a true crime comedy podcast.
That's what it is. It's what we do.
We make it for you.
Uh-huh.
And for ourselves.
That's right. And that's Karen Kilgariff.
And that's Georgia Hardstar.
And we are ourselves.
Look, there's nothing we can do about ourselves.
Yeah.
It's just how it is.
We're doing our best.
We're tightening up our games.
That's right.
But
the game can always be tightened.
Sure.
That's what life is.
Why not strive for something a little bit more?
It's like a righty-tighty.
Lesty-loosty.
Don't do that one. You gotta write in that shit.
Writing it up.
Right on up.
You don't need to loosen it down.
And that's where we're here for.
Hello and welcome. Oh, we did that part already. Tighten it up. Tighten it up.
Right in that shit. We're here for a good time, not a long time.
Yes. Oh, that's true.
I know.
Is that from your yearbook? It's good. Real good.
Sang your buns. Goodbye, good luck, good leg, get fucked.
Stay real.
You don't know that one?
No.
Oh, shit. Irvine must have been crying.
Goodbye, good luck, get laid, get fucked. Hell yes.
It's dirty.
What's up, Irvine 92? Or whenever.
That's about right.
98?
I graduated in 98, yeah. You know people like who listen to this podcast were born in 98?
Ugh.
Isn't that weird? That
you
they have
guys?
Ear holes at work and like we don't have to like censor them?
They're... Well, yeah, there's nothing we can do about their ear holes.
Because they're 20.
They're underdeveloped. Your hammers and your shoehorns, you know, the things inside your ear holes.
Okay. Your baby teeth.
Your little baby teeth that are all up in your face.
Come down.
You're going to come down during this podcast.
You're drinking coffee. It's just...
We're doing it. We're
proud
saying
of you.
Anything we can think of. Oh, you're talking about the 98ers. The 98%ers.
No.
How do you guys do it? They've never not known the internet.
Guys, keep going.
They've never not known cell phones.
It gets worse and then it gets better.
Oh.
Then it gets a little shitty again in like mid-30s.
It's basically like the stock market. It's going to go down, up, down, up, 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 down, 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 up.
So, write in that shit and tighten that shit.
And bear market, bull market, I don't know the difference.
Amen.
Let's hear it, sister.
Yeah, there's elephants. There's donkeys.
The elephant and donkey market.
And then there's a bull. Okay. We did it. That was the plot of Succession.
I love Succession. I like to pretend that Succession and the Righteous Gemstones work in, that they live in the same world, because in the last episode I watched of the Righteous Gemstones, they went through that theme park.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if this is the theme park the Succession
they
family owns?
And then it's this thing, it's like Sunday night. Are you in the mood for fucking weird shit like Gemstones or weird shit like Succession?
Yeah. They are the same show going in different directions.
That's right.
This must have been written about on like BuzzFeed already.
Yeah, it's got to have been a snappy article in a snappy world.
Send us the snappy article you wrote about the Succession.
You
20-year-old.
You know, you sit at a fucking, what's it called, aggregator, and you just type all day.
Yeah.
And you wrote an article about this.
You're the one that's working the, what's it called?
Aggregator.
Mm-mm. What's the other computer word that we always like to use?
Instigator.
It's not an instigator.
Steven, you're a millennial.
Algorithm.
Thank you! Our millennial Falcon.
Millennial Ray Morris is here.
I'll be here all day.
I stole that.
You better be here all night, motherfucker.
You will be all here all night editing this part of the show. No one's ever going to hear any of this, right?
No, okay, absolutely
good.
Not.
Okay, good.
We sound old.
And we're back not being able to think of the word algorithm.
Aggregator. Yes.
Algorithm. Anyway.
Hey, what do you have?
Little news. Some news. News and reviews.
News and reviews.
Oh, well, let's do the business first.
Okay.
So business people, tune in.
Business in the front. Here we go.
And then we'll party in the back.
That's right. My favorite weekend. Guys, you're sick of hearing us talk about this.
We're still excited about it, though.
That's right.
So, too bad.
We're fucking taking over Santa Barbara.
There's going to be so many old white people that don't understand what's happening.
Kind of sorry.
But not really.
Yeah.
So, the packages are sold out. So, you can't get, like, a whole weekend package, but individual tickets are still on sale.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bunch of shows, so you can come to all of them.
Yeah.
Still. And also, we're having a fucking art show for the murderinos that are attending the weekend. So you can submit your artwork for the art exhibit at My Favorite Weekend. The info is in the news section of the website. And for people who are coming or not coming, if you want to come and you're a murderino maker and you just want to fucking sell your wares at our little cute, what's it called?
Like a pop-up store?
Our pop-up
shop?
Bazaar? You can do that.
It's going to be a bazaar.
It's going to be snakes. I don't know.
Tents and snakes?
Yeah. Cool. You can do it. Also, info and link to submission forms is in the news section of the website.
Beautifully read, Georgia.
There are so many people who make such incredible art. If you're in Los Angeles, come fucking drive up for the day. Sell your
Please.
Shit. We'd love to see it.
Let's see your knife earrings. Let's see your
your cross stitch eat a dick.
Anything like that. If you feel like doing it and you want to come up and do it, we really would love to host you and see it.
But here's the thing: submission deadlines are October 20th, so that's like in a couple days.
Yeah, you have to actually submit, and people need to know you're coming, so that's important.
You know, you're saying to your friends, like, I don't know if I should do it. I don't think I'm good enough, and there's going to be so many talented people there. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Just do it! Don't fucking... Everyone sucks. Just do it.
Just do it.
What if you're the best one?
Yeah, exactly. What if you don't realize that you don't have imposter syndrome? What you have is secret superstar syndrome.
Ooh.
Thank you. I was waiting for some kind of reaction to that.
Ooh.
What other business? Oh, are we going to do the TV guide of Exactly Right Media?
Yes. Let's see. The Murder Squad has a bonus episode up right now.
Yes.
Where Billy Jensen does something.
Okay. So what he did, and this is in conjunction with Billy Jensen's book, Chase Darkness With Me, they're doing these book events at Barnes and Nobles across the land.
Ooh.
And essentially Billy went and found a very old murder case. And so they're going to be releasing clues. And then you get to basically work on this murder case and try to solve it with the clues that are released.
That's fucking brilliant.
It's really, really cool. So they have this bonus episode coming out. So listen to this week's Murder Squad, and it'll make sense more than the way I'm explaining it right now. It's really interesting and cool, and Billy did it all.
On the Purrcast is Channing Apodaca. He's a comedian, and he has a fucking adorable cat that I've seen. Mm. That's amazing.
Great.
What is Do You Need a Ride have, Karen?
Do You Need a Ride? We're recording it tomorrow, and the rumor is that Billy Wayne Davis is going to make it onto this episode.
I've heard that like six fucking times.
No, I know. It's very true.
He's the Matt Damon of Do You Need a Ride?
That's right. So as far as we know right now, that's what's happening tomorrow.
Cool. He has the most lovely Southern accent. It's just worth it to hear
also,
him
talk. His stand-up is brilliant.
It's
like,
so funny.
He's just good at what he does. He's one of those comics that, like, puts in the work. He's on the road all the time. He has the best internet posters that he makes. One of them is just a picture of a wolf on a public bathroom sink. Like, clearly someone went in and took a picture before they caught it for animal control. He's that guy. Very cool.
Cute.
He's a cool guy.
And of course, there's The Fall Line, and This Podcast Will Kill You. They're coming out with new episodes soon, but you can catch up on everything. They're so fucking good.
They're so great.
Speaking of, I don't know, whatever.
Things?
We want to plug something that we just found out about from Millennial Ray Morris.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
At the UCB Theater, which is like a big theater here in LA for sketch comedy, for improv, for just fucking weird shit, fun shit comedy shows.
Yeah.
It turns out, we just found out that someone's doing a My Favorite Murder, the Unauthorized Musical. It's going
to
be on.
And we're here to authorize
it. We are going to authorize it.
Whatever it is, we don't know.
We put our stamp of approval on it.
There's no way it's not critical and mean.
We hope they don't hate us.
There's no way they don't hate us.
It's October 29th at UCB Inner Sanctum at 10 p.m. Oprah Winfreckle and Michael O'Connor are the comedians who are putting it together. And I'm here for it. I'm not going to be there for it.
Those both sound like fake names,
okay.
Which means they don't want their names to be going on to this, which means it's going to be a scorcher.
Oh, no. Well, go let us know, guys.
No, it'll be good. I'm sure it'll be fun. Who cares if they're critical? This thing, this is exactly what we're supposed to be doing. Look, at this point.
Art is art. We support art.
We support anybody getting an idea for any reason about anything.
And doing it.
Except Nazis. Okay. I have to. So I was just on vacation, yeah. A wonderful vacation.
I'm so happy for you.
And then, why?
No, I really am.
Did not sound sincere.
I know, I really am, though. You deserve it.
Thank you.
Thank I mean you. That.
No, I get that one, okay. Seemed real. But while I was there, I met a truck driver named Andrea, who, if I had 1,000 guesses of what Andrea did for a living, truck driving would be way near the end. Mm-hmm. But she came up in a, of course, we were in a bar because that's all we did was spend all of our time in bars. It was hilarious. And she came up and just said, like everybody does, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt. They're always slightly crouching down. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to say hi. And I love your podcast. And she was on her honeymoon. Aww. I'm sorry. I don't remember her brand new husband's name. I'm very sorry.
It was Chuck.
Chuck or Chad. Or Brian.
Truck or Chad.
It was a Truck or Chad. They met on the road. But anyway, hi to Andrea. You know, we're glad we could be there with you through your long hauls. And she had the most perfect manicure. Wow. I kept wanting to go, how do you drive truck with the most perfect manicure I've ever seen?
I have a fully bandaged finger right now, and I don't do jack shit all day, and an unmanicured finger. So I am impressed.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah, I just wanted to give that shout.
Oh, are you watching The Politician?
No.
Oh my God.
I have not.
You have to watch The Politician.
Okay.
It's so good. There's a, there's like an underlying, Gypsy Rose Blanchard, like kind of storyline.
Oh my.
That's so good. And it's played by Audrey Deutsch. That is, I just want to watch her.
Oh.
I just want to watch this show.
I'm sold.
It's a really good show.
I've been looking at their, they have a series of billboards on Sunset that I always look at as I go to the dentist. And they're beautifully done.
They are gorgeous.
And kind of like compelling, where it's like, are those even real people?
It's not like that.
Okay.
It looks super fancy, but it's not. I mean, it is. And it's like indulgent in like a Gwyneth Paltrow because she's in it kind of way.
Okay.
But then, oh my God. And then fucking, hold on. Oh, Jessica Lange plays the mom or the grandma with Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Yes.
She is fucking incredible.
Yeah, she's so good.
I love that show.
Wow. That's I didn't know watching. Jessica Lange was on it.
Oh my God.
Shit. Is this a Ryan Murphy joint?
Yeah, of course it is. It totally is.
That's part of his contract. He's like, and where will Jessica Lange be participating in all of this?
The Jessica Lange, Zoe Deutsch characters, the grandma and daughter with, you know, I could just watch them all day. It's incredible.
Awesome.
Whatever.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Wait, you'll is it on it. Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll love it.
Okay, great.
It's like so your show.
Thank you. I need it because now I'm done with both Succession, with the combo shows, the spinoff Succession and The Righteous Gemstones.
Get it, girl.
They're done.
If you're like me, you're always looking for a story to dive into. Whether it's a family drama or a mystery to solve, the key to getting hooked is the details. I need rich visuals and intricate storylines, and June's Journey has that and more. June's Journey is a mobile mystery game that follows June Parker, a daring young woman, on a quest to uncover the truth about her sister's murder. This is your chance to test your detective skills because you'll play the game as June herself. Explore beautifully designed scenes from the 1920s, like lavish estates and gardens, and don't forget to keep an eye out for hidden clues. There are twists, turns, and catchy tunes, all leading you deeper into the thrilling storyline. And if you play well enough, you could make it to the Detective Club. There, you'll chat with other players and compete with or against them. June needs your help, but watch out, you never know which character might be a villain. Shocking family secrets will be revealed, but will you crack the case? Find out as you escape this world and dive into June's world of mystery, murder, and romance. It's all just one tap away. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. That's June's Journey. Download the game for free on iOS and Android. Goodbye.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Craft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all made in, made in.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com.
Goodbye. Who goes first this week? Me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. This is a story that I discovered over the summer while I did my usual cold case Googling. Mm-hmm. And it turns out this is this huge story in Italy and in Europe. And it's just like everyone knows about it, but I had never heard about it.
Okay.
This is the cold case disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi.
Okay.
All right. I got so much information from this from the Toronto Star article by Sandra Contenta. By an all that's interesting article by Marco Margaritoff, and an article at The Guardian by Harriet Sherwood and Angela Gufrida, and of course, Wikipedia and Reddit, our best friends.
Have to. Oh, I was just going to say really quick, because I keep seeing this every time I use Wikipedia lately. Please, if you can, go donate $5 to Wikipedia.
Yes.
They need it. They talk about it often. It's important. If you could do it, it would help us a lot, because we need to make sure that we can always use Wikipedia.
It's the only way we know how.
And I swear I've done it.
I have too. I promise.
Yeah. You do it too.
I do. I'm a good person. Okay.
I promise.
Sorry. Trust me. Okay. So this case is the only Vatican citizen ever to be kidnapped.
Oh,
and
shit.
So I'm going to need your help with this Catholic shit.
Ooh, crack, 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 crack.
I'm Jewish and I don't get it. Of course, young people go missing all the time, all over the fucking world. This tragic cold case is one of many.
Yes.
I want to make that clear. But it's become one of Italy's most enduring mysteries and has yielded tons of conspiracy theories over the years, with some involving ties to the Pope,
yep,
the Mafia, of course, and the fucking Masons. That's right, Karen.
It all goes all the way to the Lord.
That's right. Our Lord and Savior.
Jesus Christ. Oh. Or whoever your Lord and Savior might be.
It's your decision.
It's your life.
That's right. So, in June of 1983, 15-year-old Emanuela Orlandi had just completed her second year of high school. She's this beautiful, you know, normal kid. She had grown up in Vatican City with her three sisters and brother, her mother, and her father, who was a clerk in the office that scheduled meetings for Pope John Paul II.
Did you say beatings for Pope John Paul II?
No, I wish I had. Meetings.
Okay, meetings.
Yeah.
Great. Many things would work there.
He'd like to film himself. No. So the children there have this safe, happy life in Vatican City. They have free run of the Vatican gardens. And according to Emanuela's older brother, Pietro, sometimes the Pope would fucking swing by and be like, yo, what's up? God is good. Whatever, whatever. Basically, it was a happy childhood.
Zion.
Yeah.
To
Christ.
Yeah.
That's right. And Emanuela was a smart, kind girl. So normal childhood, as normal as it can be living in the Vatican City.
I mean, just the idea of it. I know that there is a Vatican City,
yeah,
and I know it's its own totally separate thing and all those things. But the idea that people actually live there,
right,
and with children and stuff, I thought it was just the clergymen.
Yeah. Okay.
That's fascinating.
I'll tell you.
Okay.
So I didn't know a lot of this. Mm-hmm. Vatican City is a sovereign state of about 1,000 people. So people actually live there like it's a state.
Okay.
And it's ruled by the Pope, obviously. It was declared a sovereign state in 1929 as part of the Lateran Treaty between the Holy See and Italy.
Yeah.
And that's
S-E-E.
That's S-E-E for all you Jews out there, because I had never heard of it.
The Holy See is the Pope, right?
Yeah. The Holy See is the universal government of the Catholic Church, and the Vatican City State is a sovereign independent territory inside of Italy where it operates from.
Oh, it's like the Pope's whole government.
Yes. Okay. So it's, but it operates from there, and got he it. Fucking, oh, he runs this shit.
He's the king. He's the president. He's like, he's in charge.
Jay-Z to New York City.
Got it.
Runs this shit.
Yeah.
The Orlandi family is part of a small group of lay Vatican citizens living within the walls of the city state, because people have to do like lay stuff, like butler and, you know, gardener and
answer the phone
and schedule beatings for the Pope.
Answer that red phone. Yes, yeah. The beating will be at noon.
That's right.
Hang that phone up.
That's right. Pray. So there are some lay people there.
Okay.
Okay. On June 27th, 1983, 15-year-old Emanuela, who was a pretty and musically talented girl, is in her second year of high school. I already fucking said that. School year recently ended, but she continues to take flute and piano lessons 3 times a week at a school connected with the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music. So she's good, and she's dedicated to music.
She better be good.
That's right.
At the Pontifical Institute.
Pontificate this, bitch! She's also part of the church choir in the Vatican. Like,
whoa.
No joke. She's just, like, talented. Yeah. I wrote highfalutin before I realized what a great pun it was, because she plays the flute.
Oh.
Highfalutin.
Highfalutin.
Let me explain this.
I feel like your puns come from God, because they're so highfalutin as an example.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That day, Emanuela is headed to flute class. She asks her older brother, Pietro, to drive her the mile-long bus. No, to drive her. He's like, nope, I can't do it. They get in a fight. And of course, he regrets it every fucking day of his life.
Horrible.
And it's so sad.
I hate those parts of these stories.
That's right. She instead takes the bus to class. A traffic cop and a constable later come forward and say that they saw her in front of the Italian Senate talking to a young man in a green BMW. But the Senate security cameras weren't working that day, so they didn't catch anything. After class around 7 p.m., Emanuela calls home and talks to one of her sisters. She tells her that a man had offered to pay her almost $200 to distribute pamphlets for Avon. Yeah. At a fashion show that weekend.
What?
So I remember people used to just come up to you and be like,
do you want a job? A cash job?
Yeah, kind of. In 83?
Maybe, but...
Pretty girl. Like, I just need teenagers to do this cheap job for me.
How about you apply for a job, like, at where? The warehouse. And then you don't have to worry about getting a job through a car window from someone you don't know.
I mean, I feel like in 83, that was just, like, a thing, maybe.
Absolutely. I mean... Yes, total possibility.
And who knows? There's so many red herrings in this that, and like some, so many clues that you don't know that they, if they lead anywhere or not. So this could just be a normal thing.
Here's the other thing I'd like to call into suspicion.
Yeah.
Not a lot of dudes working for Avon.
That's right.
In my experience.
That's
my
right.
My aunt, some neighbor ladies, but it's pretty much it's a woman based industry.
And $200 is a lot of fucking money.
In 83?
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like just to do a cheap job, you're talking about $50 here.
Yeah, that's, you know, like, I mean? Yes. I think...
It seems sketchy.
It seems super... Because wouldn't it be like $1,500 in today's money?
Probably.
Roughly?
Yeah.
I don't know if Vatican
money
is.
Well, what about Italian
same.
Money? Yeah.
I know. Lira.
Really?
I don't know. Oh.
I believe it. She was given... she told him she would answer that evening after asking her parents, but her sister said they weren't home. That was the last anyone ever heard from Emanuela. When she doesn't return home by the next day, she's officially declared a missing person. And over the next 2 days, announcements of the disappearance are published in the published and like missing posters go up with the Orlandi home phone number written on them.
Oh no.
Yeah, like call with any clues. So a few days later, a 16-year-old boy calls to say he and his fiance had run into her the day she disappeared. He reports, it's all this crazy shit. Like, he said that they met her at a local square. They described her correctly, but like her glasses and her flute, and told them that she had run away. She told them that she had run away from home and was selling Avon products. So it kind of like matched up.
Yeah.
A couple days after that, a man who owns a bar between the Vatican City and the music school named Mario calls and says that a girl matching Emanuela's description had confided in him about being a runaway, and said that she would return home for her sister's wedding, which was truthful, and that she was supposed to play the flute in the sister's wedding, which was also true.
Okay.
So it kind of made them think like maybe she's just a runaway. By July, Rome has over 3,000 posters with Emanuela's photograph, and her disappearance becomes a national story. Mm. And, like, it's a face that I think anyone in Italy would know as like, the missing girl.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a huge story to them.
Yeah.
And it becomes a national story, especially when, on Sunday, July 3rd, during his weekly public Sunday prayer at St. Peter's Square, Pope John Paul II makes a public appeal about Emanuela's disappearance.
Oh my God.
And says that she was basically applies that she was kidnapped and prays for her speedy return. And this is the first time that Emanuela's family had even considered kidnapping. They thought she was a runaway.
Right.
But for some reason, the Pope was like, she's been like, does he have more information than we know?
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So now,
maybe he's just hoping, like many, many families do when people go missing.
The fucking Pope. Had like this big fucking.
I don't know. Maybe he was like trying to turn a slit like it's not. I don't know. I don't know. But that's also, it's so heavy that the Pope said something about her.
Right. But
it's such also a big deal.
It's also the fact that it was the first person to be kidnapped in the Vatican citizen.
Right. But I'm saying usually in situations like that, those kinds of institutions brush it under the rug. It's like, no, nothing bad's ever happened.
Right.
Like
so,
Disneyland won't let anybody die on their property
type of thing. Yes, exactly.
It's the Vatican is very similar to Disneyland.
That's right.
It's good to know that they have better laws there.
Disneyland City, as we know, is a sovereign state and that the independent territory inside of Anaheim where it operates from.
It established in 1923.
That's right.
Got it.
Okay. So now months before the kidnapping, a friend of Emanuela's named Raffaella. These names probably sound so beautiful when said by an Italian person.
Yes, absolutely.
So this gal is the daughter of the Pope's butler, and he told her father that she was being followed by a man who had tailed her on six separate days as she rode the bus to school. And this is a few months before Emanuela had gone missing.
Okay.
Her father had warned her that there was a rumor of a possible kidnapping being planned. And because of this, that this girl, Raffaella, was transferred to a different school and wasn't allowed to leave Vatican City alone. So,
Whoa.
This might be a pattern.
Okay.
And when the claim is investigated by an Italian intelligence officer, when, the detective comes to fucking check it out, he's taken off the case and given a desk job.
Oh.
So it might go all the way.
All the way to the top.
2 days after the Pope's appeal, the Orlandi family receives the first of a number of anonymous phone calls. One call reports Emanuela is supposedly the prisoner of a terrorist group. Okay. Now, in Italy at this time, Italy is the largest communist party in the West at the time. And this is a time of fucking crazy violence and political unrest and like mafia stuff. It's almost like a cold war inside the country, like fighting foreign factions.
Yeah.
As well as by extremist national groups.
Wow.
So like not a good time to be there and be
walking around as a teenager.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
2 days after the Pope's appeal, the Orlandi family receives the first of a number of anonymous phone calls.
Okay.
The caller in this one says that in exchange for Emanuela's release, they demand the release of Mehmet Ali Agha. Mehmet is a Turkish man who did you know that that Pope John Paul II was shot?
Yes.
In attempted assassination?
Yes. And then he forgave his assassin.
Okay. That's crazy.
It's super crazy. And also that's why when the Pope came and toured America, he was in the Pope mobile that was like, he was basically in what looks like one of those
glass.
Old trouble where the dice pops back up, but a Pope in there.
Yeah.
Yes. Because of that.
Because of this guy.
Because this guy that actually shot him.
So the person who's calling is demanding the release of the dude who shot him four fucking times and hit him, and he fucking survived.
He survived.
In 1981. So they're saying that they kidnapped Emanuela to trade her for this prisoner.
Okay.
Because he's in prison now.
Yeah. Well, don't you think he should be, though?
Yeah.
Wait, why are you on the Turk side?
I'm not. I'm saying a fact.
You're right. defend it.
He's also the responsible for the murder of a left-wing journalist and human rights advocate named Abdi Pekki. No other information is given, but Pietro, the brother, says, when they asked to exchange Emanuela, to us it meant she was alive. So this is like the first time that they are being asked to trade. That means she's like, it gave them kind of hope.
Being, like held somewhere.
Even though the request was absurd. They were like, it's not going to fucking happen, but at least she's alive.
Yeah.
So in the following days, other calls are received, including one from a man who becomes, and he calls himself the American because he's American.
Sure.
Or has an American accent. I don't know. He plays a recording, allegedly, of Emanuela's voice over the phone. He also wants to arrange a deal for Emanuela's return in exchange for Mehmet Al-Aga's release, the guy who shot at the Pope.
Yeah.
He says that the calls from the two men, remember the two guys from the day of that were like, oh, she was in my bar and said she was a runaway and we met her in the square. Those were like his men.
Oh.
And they were calling to try to slow down the investigation by insinuating that she was a runaway.
Yeah, I was going to say that part of it is like, then the family is finding out like she was going to run away. We didn't think she was going to run away.
Right. So they stop looking as hard and they're waiting. And they have information about her that was like kind of correct. So they that could possibly be true. I think it is.
But if they were following the other girl that was then not allowed to go anywhere by herself for days and days, it's easy to find out stuff like that. If they're just walking behind and eavesdropping.
That's true. Like seeing where she goes and her flute shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he says the calls from the two men who claimed to see her that day, are members of his organization, which is a Turkish extremist nationalist group called the Grey Wolves.
Ooh.
And like these guys are fucking in the mix at this time too, like fighting with Italy. Okay. Another call from the American dude led to a bag in a garbage bin with a photocopy of sheet music by a composer that Emanuela had been studying. So these are all the like clues that they give. And like, there's one that's like, she has six moles on her back. She has all her friends have dark hair. Like nothing conclusively leads, like, points
proves
to her.
That she's with them.
It doesn't seem like it.
Right.
But a copy of her music school registration card was found inside a public garbage bin. But it was a copy. So, like, who knows where that came from?
Right.
So, in an interview in prison, this guy, Agkad, declares that Emanuela was kidnapped by Bulgarian agents of the Grey Wolves. He himself, Mehmet, he claims that the KGB had put him up to the shooting of the Pope all along. So the fucking KGB is in here now.
Whoa, God.
And that the other, another 15-year-old girl actually had gone missing at the same time as Emanuela did, Mariella Gregori. She was abducted at the same time as Emanuela, and he says it's part of a plan to secure his release from prison. So like these two young 15-year-old girls had been kidnapped for this reason. He claims that the girls were taken to a royal palace in Liechtenstein where they're living in a convent. Over the years, there's been an insane amount of theories circulated in the Italian press and with Italians. Like, they go crazy over this. I'm not getting into all of them. I would highly recommend, if you want to know more, to read the article in the Toronto Star about this. It goes fucking deep. But in 2005, another anonymous call comes to an Italian TV show saying that the tomb of the gangster Enrico De Padillas has evidence that would help in the disappearance of Emanuela.
Oh.
Okay, so this guy's dead. They're like, look, check out the tomb. Enrico De Padillas had been a leader of the Banda della Magliani gang, which was at the top of Rome's criminal world. Oof. So they were like the criminal fucking overlords, and this guy was like part of it. In February 1990, DPDS was shot and killed by rival members of his gang and buried at St. Apollinaire's crypt at one of Rome's most prestigious churches.
Okay.
And all these people are like, why the fuck is this like guy who was in the mafia buried in this like prestigious crypt? Buried there are numerous cardinals and senior members of the Vatican, and burials hadn't occurred for over a century there.
Okay, so suddenly they're opening it back up.
Right, that's okay. Fucking weird.
Okay,
and it also just happened to be attached to the building where Emanuela had studied music.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay, but isn't not to
please.
But just sitting back.
This is a whole case. Is let's go ahead and
okay, because it's at such a tiny place. That everything is going to be a Vatican City and like Vatican.
But what about outside of it?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying if it's close by, right?
That's right.
It's all kind of connected.
Yeah, and it might not mean anything. But the fact that a notorious gangster was buried at the sacred place made everyone go, what the fuck?
And so was that not, like, known until this came out?
It wasn't known until it came out.
Ooh, and, okay.
Like, it had been years, and people were like, hang on a second.
Yeah, there's something's going on here.
Jesus, say what? There were all kinds of gang ties and this, like, fucking crazy, crazy evil messianic groups, like, that I'm not getting into.
The Illuminati?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
That deal, like, I think they laugh at the Illuminati because they're like, that's bullshit.
And everyone knows about them.
That's right.
That's not a secret group.
This is like some crazy Masonic group that like killed their fucking like banker and shit.
Oh.
Some banana stuff.
Sure.
They deal with money launderings through the Vatican. So all this money's being laundered through the Vatican with this fucking gang, like mafia team.
Okay.
I don't know what they call themselves.
It's a team, like soccer.
Yeah. And all kinds of suspicious deaths happen. But basically, it's theorized that Emanuela was kidnapped to blackmail the Vatican into giving back the money it owed this gang that this guy belonged to. And it's said that they did get the money back thanks to a deal cut by this guy, Enrico de Padillas. And part of that deal that he cut was, I want to be buried in one of these fucking crypts.
Whoa.
Right?
Okay.
It's like adding on it. I know they're going to give me whatever I want. I also want this.
Okay. It's kind of a large ask. I'd like to be buried with saints and cardinals.
Yeah, but it's like, you got us back $200 million.
Oh, true.
Okay, you can.
Yeah, okay.
And we need you to get this money back for us, or we look really bad, or whatever the fuck.
Okay.
De Padillas' former lover named Sabrina, she said that she had seen Emanuela after her kidnapping, and that she had been held by the De Padillas' gang for several months. She also claimed she saw Emanuela's lifeless body in a sack before it was dumped in a cement mixer.
Oh.
I know, on a construction site in a seaside town in Rome. But she might be a little crazy. And also, the construction site, it turns out, had been built after, before.
It had already been built?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it wasn't credible, but there's some weird credible shit that she has information of.
Yeah.
But she also might be like, I don't know.
Well, they always say that, right?
Yeah.
That's right. The ultimate disqualifier.
She's crazy.
She is so crazy. And that's then right. It's a person just going, I actually witnessed this entire thing. And,
yeah.
And then no one believes you.
Right. That's very true.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Orlandi family lobbies the Vatican to open De Padillas' tomb. Because remember, they had said that look in there and you'll find some information. The Vatican actually agrees to open the tomb, which is crazy. When it's opened on May 13th, 2012, only Padillas' remains are inside.
Oh.
I know. Bummer. Still, the links there I find very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very.
The most disturbing theory revolves around a concerted effort on behalf of the Vatican, local police, and regional lawmakers to kidnap young girls like Emanuela Orlandi and Mariella Gregori and force them to be sex slaves.
Mm-hmm.
What's that TV show we watched a long time ago that had similar undertones?
Top of the Lake.
Good job.
It goes all the way to the top of the lake.
Okay. In May 2012, also an 85-year-old exorcist named Gabriele Amorth claims that Orlandi was kidnapped by a member of the Vatican police for sex parties and then murdered. That's what he says. But this guy is fucking like the kind of guy who's like, Harry Potter is Satan and shit.
Oh,
yeah. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He claims that an official of an unnamed foreign embassy was involved as well. But he's a little cuckoo, but like maybe like a little bit of what he says is true.
Well, I feel like these days when we are actively watching all conspiracy theories come to life.
Yeah.
Front of our eyes,
yeah.
It's getting easier and easier to believe every theory
right.
of everything because you're just like, yeah, those exist. Yes, this has been proven to be real.
And the cuckoo people are the ones who actually like come forward and don't mind seeming cuckoo by fucking saying these things.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're saying it.
We're saying it, and we're the craziest of all.
Another theory says that Emanuela was kidnapped by spies acting for the former Soviet Union and used to blackmail Pope John Paul II into ending support for Poland's dissident Solidarity Union movement.
Lech Walesa? That was a big thing in the 80s.
Really?
Yeah, it was a big deal. It was just that Poland was basically getting liberated. And I think it was through, like, it became international news. Lech Walesa was the leader of that party that basically everyone's just like, oh yeah, people need to have freedom.
Okay.
It's the kind of thing. It might have also had something to do with communist Russia, but I shouldn't talk about any of this. I'm just basically saying this is like me talking about old Scooby-Doo episodes, except for it was the politics that I absorbed as like a 7-year-old,
yeah,
essentially.
With the news on it all.
All times. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
No, this was back when the news only came on.
Oh, right.
From 6 to 7.
And your parents left it on.
Yeah.
All right. Then this last year, the family's lawyer received an ominous note, which contained a photograph of a tomb and an angel who was like watching over the tomb, like a concrete, I don't know, angel.
A statue?
Thank you. And it said, and the angel was pointing down at the tombs, and the photograph said, seek where the angel indicates.
That's straight out of the Da Vinci Code.
That's right.
I mean, okay.
This is like Da Vinci Code business.
It really is.
Okay. In reference to the marble angel guarding the crypt in question. This clue leads to the Pontifical Teutonic Cemetery in the Vatican, where there's an angel statue that's pointing at some tombs. So plans are made to open the fucking tombs.
Really?
This is where I came in with my late night cold case.
Yes. Googling. Okay.
The cemetery normally houses the remains of German speaking Catholic members, but like fucking 1800s we're talking.
Okay.
So this past July, it's what, October right now? This past July, 2019, the Vatican opens the tombs.
Oh.
In them are supposed to be the remains of Princess Sophie of Hohenlohe and the Duchess Charlotte Frederica. Okay. In it is the remains of no one.
No bodies.
No one.
Oh.
Not the princess or the duchess or Emanuela.
It's an empty tomb.
Uh-huh.
Which means people have been taken out of the tomb.
Right. Right. After it had been opened, they find an underground space inside the Pontifical Teutonic College, which had been covered by a manhole. Inside of that is thousands of bones that appear to be from dozens of individuals, both, quote, adult and non-adult. But they look ancient, but they're DNA testing them now. They're currently conducting an investigation into the whereabouts of the princesses as well.
Oh, my God. So they basically opened the tomb and a new mystery started.
That's right.
A simultaneous mystery.
That's right. Which people think, like, just goes to show you there's some fucking crazy Vatican mystery shit.
Yes,
going
because
on
they don't have to they don't have to explain anything to anybody.
No,
there is a rumor that there's a Vatican, like a secret museum under the Vatican that has like old dinosaurs. Steven, you'll be interested in this, like old rare dinosaurs and things that, like, you know, they're like, it's the Loch Ness Monster and blah blah blah. Like, there's things there that they've never released out because the Vatican doesn't want
people,
the general public,
out.
To know about it,
and it doesn't fit into their norm of like, this is what happened and this is what's going on, and here's the narrative, and that's the narrative you believe. Like, if you shake people's faith thinking that their faith is smaller than what actually is, people lose their fucking shit.
That's right.
Not us.
No.
Not,
we consider all options.
That's right. Not murderinos. We want to know the truth.
We want to know what's in that basement.
There's no basement at the Vatican. Excuse me.
There are podcasts out there that try so hard to do this for real, and we
bless
don't.
Your heart.
God damn it! Please go listen to one of those after
That's
this.
That's right. There's rumors that Emanuela is not only alive, and her brother knows about it, and her brother is like the advocate that's trying to fucking get the Vatican to fess up.
Yeah.
Someone is spreading a rumor that she's Emanuela is masquerading as her brother's wife.
No.
So bad that one reporter starts stalking his family for months trying to prove the theory. She wraps tape around her finger and stumbles into like his mother, Emanuela's mother, to get a sample of her hair for DNA testing, and rummages through the garbage at his house and takes his wife's used tampons.
Oh, no.
It's like, this is their fucking JonBenet.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like it.
Petra says nothing surprises him anymore.
Aww.
So the disappearance has been linked to the KGB, the attempted murder of the Pope, the Vatican connection to the mob, satanic orgies, and money laundering at the Vatican Bank, among other things. But ultimately, there's no tangible proof of what actually happened to Emanuela over three decades ago. And although a lot of red herrings and conspiracies may have clouded over the facts. So that's one of those things where there's so much fucking things to trace and places that lead nowhere that who knows what's real at this point.
Right.
Like, who even knows who saw her that day and who's telling the truth?
Right. Who was misleading people on purpose?
Right.
What was real? Also, you know, 1983 is basically like saying 1883 in terms of police, you know, forensic anything or all the, you know,
it's
people
almost like
having...
they need to go back to the original police file and start there because it's the most simple. And that's usually where the answer is.
Yeah, true. True. But it's also, I, it's so sad to me because it is that thing of like, whatever the answer is, it's that the victimization of like a teenage girl, because it's like, we'll use you for whatever the plot is, whatever the crime is. It's, there's an innocent girl and her family.
Totally.
It's just,
and it could just be some fucking sicko who kidnapped her.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and who's never going to get his fucking justice.
Right, because everyone's like, oh, it's a satanic whatever. We're just right. like, no, oh no, what about if there's just a like a serial killer or serial predator right. that's just doesn't get caught?
Exactly. Emanuela's mother, Maria, who's now in her 80s, she set a plate for her missing daughter at Christmas for years after she went missing. Emanuela's father passed away in 2004. In March of 2013, the first Sunday mass of his pontificitation, his first fucking Sunday mass, Pope Francis gave a sermon. And after the mass, he greeted every person who left the sermon. He shook Maria, the mother's hand, and said, Emanuela is in heaven. To which the brother, Pietro, responded, until there's proof to the contrary, I live in hope that she's alive, and I hope you will help me find the truth.
Yeah.
To which the Pope responded, she's in heaven.
What?
Pietro himself thinks that the Muhammad Ali Agca angle was a red herring, the guy who shot at the Pope.
Yeah.
He says, I believe Pope John Paul had to weigh the truth about Emanuela against the image of the church, and he made a choice. I believe he knows what happened. So a lot of people think that they could have gotten her back, and it could have, there could have been some kind of trade, but it would have just ousted so many fucking stories and so many like secrets that to them it wasn't worth it.
They didn't do it.
Yeah.
There's also the possibility, because the Catholic Church has a very bad habit and reputation of covering up for priests and clergymen that just, it's just some local pedophile clergyman that did it, and they found out about it, and they're covering for him.
I mean, it's a proven fact that they do that. It's not a fucking,
no, we're not just saying it. Yeah. We all know. Everybody saw Spotlight. We know how things go.
Well, Pietro is undeterred. He refuses to stop searching for answers as to what happened to his little sister. And that is the story of the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi.
Oh, the cold cases are the saddest.
I know.
It's really awful. And it's like, yeah, that family that they don't have an answer. So it doesn't help that the Pope says she's in heaven.
Right.
Because that doesn't prove anything. And they need proof so that they can at least be in a different space than not knowing.
Totally.
I mean, that's just, it's heartbreaking.
It is, for sure.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time. And we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager. And companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information, so you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
Well, so what's funny is, can I tell the story? Yes, of, please. So Georgia told me last week that she wanted to do the story she just did, but she said, it's all about the Vatican, and I don't understand you people, what you're doing with your big, weird church, city, state.
Yeah.
Holy See. I learned a lot, by the way. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. I did, too.
As a lapsed Catholic. So she said, what if I do this? And then you basically gave me my murder for this week.
Yeah. I wanted to trade you this for this.
Yes.
But instead we're doing.
Oh, you wanted to trade so you could do this?
Yeah. Oh, so no, but I'm fine just getting the credit.
Speak as if, yeah, you get the credit for the switch,
that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, good to know.
I'm at it.
So with Georgia's suggestion, this week I'm doing the Overstegen sisters and Hani Schaft, teenage Nazi assassins.
Boom.
This story
is so excited.
Very cool. So
I don't even know it that much about it, so I'm really excited for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just like have read little basic articles.
I can't believe that there hasn't been. There was one movie made about it, just about Hani Schaft, but I can't believe there hasn't been a movie, and yes, hopefully there will be, because it's really incredible.
Well, I feel like Quentin Tarantino's movie, what was it called?
Inglourious Basterds.
Kind of like has some hints of that.
It absolutely does. Yeah. And it's kind of like the idea of like a fascist to the degree of Adolf Hitler, and the insanity and the speed freakiness of Adolf Hitler taking over almost all of Europe. I think it's cool that he made that movie, because it basically shows how many people had to rise up against the Nazis and fight in their own versions of the resistance,
yeah,
and be spies. And before that, they just owned a shoe store. They just right. were someone's wife or daughter.
It was like, imperative. It was life or death.
It was life or death. And it is the kind of thing where people slowly watch this takeover happen, but everybody thought, not in my country. There's no way it could happen here. There's a lot of that.
Or they were like, yes, in my country. I want this to happen.
Right. And that's the scary thing, is that there became this dividing line. Yeah. So it's cool to hear these stories, because we see lots of movies about the brave soldiers and all the people that fought against like the Axis powers. And yeah, that's all cool. But like teenage girl resistance fighters, I think, is a story that's so timely and perfect. So I got information from Smithsonian Magazine, The Washington Post, Wikipedia, again, please donate $5, History.com, The New York Times, and then a woman named Sophie Poldermans, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She wrote a book. I found out about Sophie Poldermans' book because I stumbled upon trying to look up a podcast that could kind of succinctly tell me the story. I found this podcast called Inspiring Women, hosted by a woman named Kate Daniels.
Nice.
That is the loveliest. It's like your favorite high school teacher hosting a podcast to talk about these women that we don't get to hear about as Beautiful. Much as we should.
I love it.
Okay, so I'll give you, and I do apologize. I am not a World War II scholar.
Wait, what?
No, this is a lot of people are going to be disappointed after this.
This is the mispronunciation episode, like Karen and Georgia.
This is the let's tread into areas we do not belong.
Let's trade religions.
Yeah.
Pocket.
And just see what we have to say. But stories that are so worth telling. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Let's first talk about this is how she pronounces it on the podcast, so I'm just imitating a Dutch woman who's clearly, this is how you're supposed to say it.
Okay.
Truus.
Ooh.
Truus Overstegen is born on August 29th, 1923, and her younger sister, Freddie, very easy to pronounce.
you said that wrong.
Right. Oh, Freddie. She is born 2 years later on September 6th, 1925, in Scotland. Netherlands, which is a small Dutch village that sits in what is now known as the city of Haarlem. So the family lives, the Overstagen family lives all together on a large ship. Fun. And the sisters are raised by very socially aware communist parents. So their mother makes a point of instilling a keen sense of justice in her daughters from a very early age. So they spent their childhoods doing stuff like making dolls for the child victims of the Spanish Civil War. Mm. Yeah, a lot of awareness about, like, you know, what's going on with other people and helping out. And both of their parents are members of the International Red Aid, which was a social service group organized by the Communist International. I've never heard of that before.
Great job.
Communist International. This is research that I'm reading. Okay. But their parents get divorced when their mom gets fed up because the father doesn't work that much and doesn't make enough money.
Sure.
It's an amicable split. But after she takes her daughters off the ship, they don't see much of their father after that. The family, the now smaller family, moves to a flat where they sleep on straw mattresses that their mother makes by hand. Freddie was later quoted as saying that they didn't have much, but her mother always was able to figure something out. Mm. And the family was always singing.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, come on.
So cute.
Sticking together and helping out. Okay. Eventually, their mother remarries and then gives birth to a third child, a boy. And so now Freddie and Truus have a little half brother. So now I'm just going to very lightly and very badly explain to you World War II. Just let me do it my way.
Oh, no. If only you could take a shot of Paul Holes' whiskey right now.
Could you imagine? Essentially, I just tried to boil it. Everybody knows. We've all watched the History Channel 1 million times.
Yes.
But essentially...
Read the book Mouse. Or read, look at the book M-A-U-S.
Yeah. The graphic novel Mouse, M-A-U-S, is from the point of view of a survivor of a Nazi concentration camp.
It's one of the most incredible books
and his
I've
son.
Ever read.
It's so incredible and horrifying. Yeah. And what a terrible time. So essentially, Germany lost World War I, and so did everybody else, because there was such incredible loss of human life, unlike anything anyone had ever seen before. Obviously, it was called World War I, but it was horrifying. And there's, you know, go see any movie about that, because people didn't even know how badly it was going to impact soldiers and the human beings. There was just so much loss of life, unlike anything anyone's seen before. Yeah. And Germany, afterwards, it was, you know, there's the whole story of the Deutschmark. It basically became useless.
They got humiliated.
They were humiliated. They were all poor. Their money was worth nothing. It was like, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, and when people are oppressed, with poverty, with all those things, then people rise to power who like to convince them that their misfortune, there's a certain group that's responsible. What a great feeling that there's just one group that's responsible for all the things that's happened to a country.
Mm-hmm. It makes it easy.
It makes it very easy. And you can, you know, focus all your hate in one direction. It's simplistic. It catches because it's the basest human reaction is, it's not my fault. It's your fault.
Yeah.
And, if I get rid of you, all of my suffering will end.
Yeah.
Not true. Obviously, most people hopefully either know that by now or will learn it. Mm. So let's now skip to 1933 when Adolf Hitler is appointed Chancellor of Germany. And he immediately organizes a campaign of violence and intimidation against Jewish people throughout Germany carried out by the Nazi party. So according to Hitler, who, as I said before, was on tons of speed, and that should never be discounted because white drugs are very bad for the brain.
White drugs with megalomaniac, you're just gonna...
And with a little art school heartbreak in there. It's not good.
Yeah.
Okay, so according to Hitler, the Jews were to blame for everything that happened to the motherland since World War I and even before that, because Jewish people had, throughout history, had become scapegoats for any time there was anything happening in a community. And this is something, like from other stories that you hear where it's like, oh, if young boys are being killed in a town, it's the Jews that just traveled through. They did it instead of, no, it's actually a thing called a serial killer that you won't know about for 100 more years. Yeah. It's I don't have to tell you. It's been going on for a while. But the problem here was this, his vicious campaign of propaganda, scapegoating, and racism. It starts with Jewish business owners, but soon it spreads to all Jewish people. And the downtrodden Germans wanted to blame their poverty and their failure and their heartache on anyone else. And they now had a government sanctioned target. Mm. And this, combined with the comforting yet psychotic fantasy that Aryan blood made them the most superior beings on earth, became this intoxicating drug that the nation began shooting up with abandon, thanks to Adolf Hitler. So with these most based hatreds justified and their worst insecurities erased, the violence of Nazism quickly spread beyond its German borders. And Freddie and Truis, who were 8 and I think 12, grew up witnessing the inhumanity of the Nazi Party firsthand. Mm. They see the propaganda, they see the cruelty, they see the intimidation, and it solidifies their drive to fight for justice. So Freddie, Truis, and their mother, or they're all very vocal about their resistance. They hand out anti-Nazi leaflets in their town, and they deface German propaganda posters that called on Dutch men to come and work in Germany.
Mm.
So they were in it before World War II was even declared.
Oh yeah, throw a tag up on that shit.
Right? No way. Say no way as early as you can.
Yeah.
Freddie's mother begins routinely hiding Jewish refugees who are from Amsterdam and Germany in their home before the war even started.
Amazing.
In 1934, the girls gave up their bedroom to start housing Jewish families who needed to go into hiding.
Wow.
So in early 1940, when Freddie is 14 and Truis is 16, the sisters get a visit from Franz van der Veel. I'm nailing
great.
These names.
You're doing great.
He is the commander for the Harlem Council of Resistance, and he formally invites the family to join in the fight. And he explains that it'll involve military training, and the girls are like, we're in.
Hell
entirely,
yeah.
Of course. They're very excited about the idea of, quote, starting a kind of secret army to fight the Nazis. And the sisters become the first two women to join the then 7-person resistance group.
Yes!
So it's a tiny little group, and these girls are all in.
Fuck yeah.
And just in time, because in May of 1940, the Nazis invade the Netherlands. And with a Nazi occupation now a reality, the work of the resistance becomes crucial. So there isn't enough time for Freddie and Truis to get the military training that they were promised, but they are taught how to march and shoot in the seclusion of the woods.
Mm.
So they learn some stuff. And once their training is complete, the teen sisters begin their daring acts of resistance.
Mm.
So one of the main things that they were doing was transporting Jewish families and refugees to designated hiding spots. And they were very involved with doing that. And in fact, early on, Truis was in a boat filled with Jewish children that they were trying to ship out of the area. And the Nazis bombed the boat and all of the children drowned. So these young girls, and I mean, we're talking about teenage girls, saw some horrific, horrific acts of war firsthand that would then go on to propel them to basically match the horror.
Yeah.
Because they knew they had to.
Yeah.
So they did things like they blew up railways with dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
They planted once a communist flag at the Nazi headquarters. And they rode around on their bikes, and it just seemed like they were two young girls, pretty girls, were riding around on bikes. And the Nazis never suspected that they were actually two resistance fighters. And if they had and stopped them, they would have found that the girls were riding around with handguns in their baskets because they weren't out for joyrides. They were tracking Nazi targets.
Mm.
So basically, the resistance would name the usually a high ranking Nazi officer. And then the girls would go out and find them and track them and corner them and basically ambush them, shoot and kill them, and then ride away unsuspected.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. And just, I will make the point that Sophie makes on the Inspiring Women podcast. There was no operating judicial system in the Nazi occupied Netherlands.
Right.
So there was, it was a Nazi government now. Yeah. They were there, they took over, and there was, they had to fight them.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to do something.
Yeah, there was nobody looking out for them.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you know, they built Dachau, I think in the early 30s.
Yeah.
So
those
concentration camps
were going there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, they were sending almost everybody there, unless you were deemed pure white and all that shit.
But in the beginning, it was communists and resistance fighters and all that shit.
Anybody that was developmentally disabled, anybody that was blind, handicapped, if you were somehow discovered to be gay, they were sending people there, you know, I think we all know this in all the different ways, but I mean, it's ridiculous to say it was a nightmare or something like that. But I mean, the world had turned upside down in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Freddie becomes very adept at this idea of being able to ride around, because she looks younger than all of them, obviously. Mm-hmm. So she was actually the first member of this resistance to kill a Nazi. And, later Truist would say about this work, that she paid the price, that they all did, because it wasn't something that they were cocky about.
Right.
She said, quote, "It was tragic, very difficult, and we cried about it every time afterwards. We did not feel it suited us. It never suits anybody, unless they are real criminals. But one loses everything. It poisons the beautiful things in life."
Yeah, if you're someone who's fighting for your freedom and for your and for citizens' freedom, you don't want to murder someone.
No.
But you have no choice.
Right. You have no choice. And you're seeing, I mean, you know, we know what the Nazis did in the day to day. These are people who came and had absolutely no humanity to them, you know. So, then the next phase of the plan started, as they got a little bit older, which is the sisters began to frequent bars where German officers hung out, and they would get all dressed up and look really beautiful and go and flirt with the Nazis. And, then they would lure them out into the woods where either they would shoot them or the members of the resistance would be hiding and they would get ambushed and shot.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's what you get for being a Nazi.
That's right.
And so then in the spring, between spring and summer of 1943, another young woman by the name of Hani Schaft joins the Harlem Council of Resistance. So she'd actively been fighting against the Nazis in the Netherlands herself. She was stealing ID cards for Jewish residents so that they could be protected and escaping and so that they could be protected. Sorry. The Council of Resistance approached Hani because they heard that she had left school after refusing to sign a pledge of loyalty to the Nazi soldiers. Her university was forcing all of the students to sign.
Oh my God.
So she was like, fuck all y'all and leave school. And the resistance is like, hey,
flag,
come and join our team.
Yeah.
We need this. So together, Freddy, Truus, and Hani successfully assassinate many high-ranking Nazi officials. But on March 20, and it goes on for a while so that then the Nazis start to catch on that people are being murdered and how is this happening? And Hani, had red hair. So eventually the story starts to come out that you have to be careful of the girl with the red hair. So on March 21st, 1945, Hani is riding her bike, transporting underground papers and a pistol when she's stopped by Nazis at a checkpoint. And because they all know and have been warned about the girl with the red hair, they search her bike and they find the papers and the pistol.
Shit.
And they realize this is the member of the resistance that's been killing high-ranking officers. They interrogate her. And they find out that she is the person they think she is. So she is Hani Schaft. So Hani Shaft is tortured and executed by firing squad on April 17th, 1945. She was only 24 years old.
Holy shit.
18 days later, the Netherlands is liberated from the Nazis.
Ugh.
Yeah. So Hani has, of course, since become a national hero in the Netherlands. She was reinterred in the honorary cemetery Erbegoffplatz Bloemendaal in the presence of Princess Juliana and Prince Bernard. Her legacy is remembered throughout the country, and actually in 1981, a movie called The Girl with the Red Hair was made about her life. Truus would go on to speak publicly about all of the work that she, her sister, and Hani did during the war. Truus becomes known for her public speaking and for her artwork. It was paintings and sculptures that she did to kind of process what they went through fighting in the resistance. Yeah. And she also writes a memoir called Not Then, Not Now, Not Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, girl. None of the three women ever reveal the exact number of Nazi officers that they assassinated, saying that they're soldiers, and soldiers never reveal the number of people they've killed.
Whoa.
So it was a very difficult after the war. The sisters had a really hard time. Obviously, they had very bad PTSD. Yeah. They didn't know it at the time. They had nightmares. They had depression. They went through a lot of stuff. And actually, Freddie, she preferred to stay out of the spotlight. She got married to a man named Jan Dekker, and she had three children with him, which she says is what helped her cope with the trauma of her past. In 1996, Truus founds the National Hani Shaft Foundation in the Netherlands in Hani's memory, and the foundation works to inform people, particularly young people, about the perils of extremism and fascism, to encourage them to actively fight for justice in their daily lives. In 2014, Freddie and Truus are awarded the Mobilization War Cross, which is a very high Dutch military honor for their resistance work, by Prime Minister Mark Rutte. And in 2016, Truus passes away from natural causes at the age of 92. And then Freddie also passed away from natural causes, and it was a day before her 93rd birthday. And she's survived by her three children, her four grandchildren, and their half-brother. And if you want more information about these three amazing women, please read Sophie Polderman's book, Seducing and Killing Nazis.
That's incredible.
Yeah. The full title, Seducing and Killing Nazis, Hani, Truus, and Freddie, Dutch Resistance Heroines of World War II. It could not be a longer title. that is the incredibly inspiring story of three young Dutch resistance fighters, Truus and Freddie Overstegen and Hani Shaft.
Karen, that was amazing.
Did I explain it all to you correctly?
Did it great. The World War II explanation was amazing. I loved it. I'm okay, serious.
Like I really have watched actually a lot of History Channel stuff about it, because it's that kind of thing of how did this happen? How did this happen?
I think it's the same thing with true crime, where it's this crossover of like, what's life been like for other people? I have to know more about it.
Yes.
I know it's not been what my life is, and I just want to learn whatever I can.
And thinking about people who have been every side of victims of war, and seeing how the even like multitudes of pain it creates.
Yeah.
There aren't any winners, really. You know what I mean? It's like there's things get maybe rebalanced in a better way, but there's so much human cost.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the, like, you want that to be like, yeah, shut a bunch of people. But of course, they're just like, no, it was absolutely not like that at all, because they didn't want to be in that position in the first place.
Right. They were doing what they felt they had to do for humanity.
Yeah. And thank God they did, because they saved a ton of people.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Good idea, Georgia.
Thank you. Good job, Karen. I'm so glad I didn't do that. I've worked very hard.
I definitely am sweating a lot. But yeah.
Great job.
Thank you.
What's your
fucking hooray?
What's a positive thing?
So, okay. This one I actually sent to you. I believe in a text, but it's our friend Brené Brown. And if you go on to BrenéBrown.com, There is a video on there. It's Super Soul Sessions. So, it's called The Anatomy of Trust.
What's up, Oprah?
And, right? Oprah's still doing it for us all. And, The Anatomy of Trust is this incredible Brené Brown video that everyone needs to watch about if you have trust issues, if you have relationship issues, so whatever it might be. It's everybody. Yeah, everyone. And it's kind of, it very much reminds me of how mind blown I was after the vulnerability video, the first one I saw of hers that's so huge and viral. But this one is really amazing about, how to have better relationships, how to build trust, and how to be trustworthy, and how that is just as important for you to be able to trust other people as it's like, we always want to go like, well, but this person did this to me or whatever. But it's like, but actually, if you can build your own sense of trustworthiness in yourself, which is about, which is basically about knowing yourself and having kind of a centered, moral view. It's just such an, why am I trying to synopsize it?
And I want to, and I haven't watched it. Like, you send me stuff sometimes where I'm just like, I can't with this, right? Like, it's just like too big for me right now.
I always like to do heavy shit.
Yeah. And sometimes, like, you gave me a really nice, like, grieving pamphlet recently, and I have it out on my desk, and I'm just like, I'll get there when I can get there.
You'll get there when you need it.
And then I think this is one of those things too, where I'm just reminding me that I need, this is exactly what I want to talk to my therapist about this week.
Yeah. It's big feelings. You definitely need like a half an hour privately so you can cry as much as you want and as hard as you want or not at all. But there's just things in it. You just go, oh yeah. Like, it's just, it's very, very helpful. And it actually is very kind of like, it's just kind of centering and calming in that way, where if you have trust issues or if you're worried about the kind of relationships you have and the way you have them, you don't have to worry about it. You just have to do work. That's all. It's, and it's baby steps. It's just like, you just have to kind of become aware and do your best. Because, and that's like, that's why Brené Brown's so awesome. Cause she just goes, here's the science. Here's what works. Here's what we, when we do our studies, here's what we see. And it's really, it's not like any kind of finger pointing. It's more like, ooh, what about a 4-step plan to feel better in this way? It's really cool. So anyway.
Karen, it's like you're talking to me, but you are.
I'm talking right in your face.
Yeah. There's nobody else.
But it's the same thing with like, you know, you recommend, I mean, this is dumb, but you recommend books to me and I just don't pay attention to you. And then I come back and go, have you read this book?
Yeah.
And you're like, I told you to read that book. It's this, I think we all take it in when we're supposed to.
Yeah.
So it's just like, put that in your, put the, you know, put that in your filing cabinet. See what happens.
But
to anybody else that's, that kind of like is looking for this thing, you can't go wrong on BrenéBrown.com anyway.
No. Yeah.
But that video especially, because my therapist has been telling me to watch it for literally 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And then I finally was like, fine, fine.
You're going to have like a daily, the daily Brené website where you just post a daily Brené quote.
For real.
Actually, on her Instagram, there's a lot of daily
Brené. Yeah, but she's doing
just follow it. Follow Brené Brown on Instagram. that's great. I mean, I'll watch it finally.
Yeah. Do it when you feel like it.
Mine was going to be that I finally cooked a meal for literally the first time in like a year.
Oh shit.
You know, I love cooking, but I just don't have time to do it. And it just takes so long.
It's overwhelming.
It was going to be that. I cut my finger real bad.
What did you make?
I just made a little chicken and vegetables meal.
Oh, okay.
Like, I then tapped the knife on accident and sliced. I guess I have nice knives.
You do.
That was going to be my fucking hooray. But then just coming here tonight, I saw a corgi puppy in the parking lot named Schmutz. And then I think I need a puppy now. So that's my fucking array of Schmutz, this teeny corgi puppy that just changed my life.
I can't imagine anything would be cuter than a corgi puppy.
I just stood there and the sweet woman was like, do you want to say hi to me? Like a little kid. It's like, I do. I really need to say hi to Schmutz.
Yes, I do need to talk to Schmutz real bad.
She was very sweet. And then she tried to bite my shoelaces. The puppy, not the woman.
Right. Ma'am, please. I'm trying to talk to your dog.
It kind of was life changing.
Yeah, you really were lit up when you came in.
Oh my God, I was screaming.
You were just pointing toward the door like, do you know what? There was a puppy
outside. I made
everyone
go out there. I mean, it was okay. Guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate you guys so much. This is fucking incredible and we're so lucky.
We still love our job.
That's right.
It's so nice.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for making it happen for us and stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?